Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
I want to welcome Conor O'Brien, Villagers, to Studio 8. Before you head off, Conor, on tour around Europe, and then you're going to be back for several Irish dates, including two nights in the Olympia here in Dublin in December. We're going to chat about your book of lyrics and lots of other stuff, but first, as a real treat, we're going to hear a song from your most recent album. This is called You Lucky One.
I can tell by your tongue that you're telling the truth, but it doesn't line up with my image of you. Would you mind very much if I added some spice, some sugar and cream, and all things nice? There's a twist in your tail that doesn't sit right.
That's a beautiful song, Conor. Tell me about You Lucky One. It's from your most recent album, That Golden Time. Where does that come from?
The song You Lucky One, it's a funny one. It's like, it's from the perspective of someone who is trying to persuade another person to abandon all of their ethics and become some sort of parasite of the marketplace. So it's a cheery little number for a Sunday morning. But it's something that I've been sort of getting more interested as I've gotten a bit older in motives and people's motives in terms of writing songs. And that song is very much the kind of, it was the beginning of something on that record where it opened up like a Pandora's box for me, and it kind of allowed me to kind of, you know, look at my shadow and really understand the kind of deepest, darkest parts of myself and all my potential and all that kind of stuff, you know. So it's a funny little number for me.
Also, the line, don't let the truth get in the way, a story's a story. And anyway, you are obviously interested in what's going on in the big, wider world. And I suppose the way people communicate, the way they think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I like that idea, C.S. Lewis's idea of chronological snobbery, where we all believe that we're at the zenith of civilization and we're at, you know, we know the truth now and they didn't know it in the past. But I sort of feel like over the last 15 years or so, we've had a sort of a regressive moment, just to, you know, zoom out a little bit. And I've seen it in the way people, I mean, I just work in the arts, so I can only really come at it from my perspective, but I've sort of seen it in the way people tend to group together and you know, get a bit nasty towards their, let's say, ideological opponents or anyone they don't agree with. And there's a sort of a narrow-mindedness appearing in places where it never used to be. And I think that's a fertile ground for songwriting, for me personally.
Yeah, that's so interesting. A lack of tolerance, you know. Now, as well as an album and a tour, there was a book this year, a collection of lyrics. Tell me about getting that into print and what it means to you to have done that.
It means a lot. I mean, I'm a total nerd. I'm a complete nerd about that stuff. And I just finished reading the Bob Dylan's book, The Philosophy of Modern Song. Basically, I finished reading that when I started working on this and Faber got in touch. And I have so much stuff because I just write obsessively all the time. And 99% of it is absolute crap. And I decided to put 50% of that into this book as well, because I think it's an interesting thing to see, you know. I've always been the kind of person who, when it comes to art, even visual art, I prefer to see people's sketches and kind of to see the process behind the finished piece, because quite often the finished piece has a sort of veneer which the sketches don't, you know.
So which are more important to you, the lyrics or the music?
Well, for me, as much as I love words, it always begins with music. My love of writing songs is, you know, comes from film soundtracks when I was very young, chord changes, and then just hearing kind of music in the house growing up. And I feel like that's sort of a way to trick myself when I'm writing songs. I kind of feel like the words are actually just, my best songs happen when I'm sort of busy doing something else. That's the prize, when you realize that there was something else going on that you're just the conduit for. And that's really why the book's called Passing a Message, because it's kind of about that process.
And you mentioned there, of course, music in the home. Remind me, where did you get your huge interest and talent in music?
Where did I get my talent? Oh, geez, I don't know. my folks always had all the jazz singers and Nina Simone and Ella Fitzgerald, and Sinatra was always on, and all the Duke Ellington stuff, big band stuff is really what was going on a lot. And then, yeah, I'm the youngest by quite a long way, so I have older brother and sisters, and they were always putting on whatever was big in the day, and lots of Jimi Hendrix and Pink Floyd as well, and lots of 60s stuff. And so I got the full gamut of musical influence, you know, and was just obsessed with it from a young age, like really, really kind of scarily obsessed with it.
Like what?
Like literally not leaving the house for a week if I was onto something, or, you know, kind of to the point where my mother was a bit worried about me and stuff, that kind of thing. It just became an obsession, you know, and then I learned to temper it over the years and sort of allow it to infiltrate my life a little bit more, you know. But for a while, it was everything.
You have a very unique and a really beautiful voice. Was that spotted young, like when you're in school? It's amazing the number of people I interview who have really great voices and they say, no one ever noticed it. But was yours noticed?
A little bit. I was a choir boy for a brief period of time. Mm. And I did always seem to get chosen for the summer camp plays and stuff as the lead singer. I wasn't really singing. I feel like your voice is such a personal thing and you really have to unlock it. And for a long time I was playing in bands. I used to busk on Grafton Street, just play the guitar with a friend who would play trumpet, and I would never sing. I was terrified, you know. And it was only kind of into my 20s that I found my singing voice, you know. I've always had issues with lots of things like public speaking and all that kind of stuff, very high anxiety levels and very hypervigilance, and to me, that's connected to my voice in some regard. There's kind of a sense that I'm confiding in the listener, I think, when I sing. Or at least I've been told that.
And as you've got a little bit older, does that kind of high anxiety, does that get easier? Does it minimize? Do you get more confident the more success you have?
Yeah, I mean, the world's gotten so strange, hasn't it? So you really have to compartmentalize these days if you don't want to just think about everything all the time. So I've had phases. I mean, during COVID, I was pretty bad. I was, you know, drinking lots of wine and being online too much and getting into arguments, simplistic, stupid arguments with people. But I personally, myself, I've kind of come out the other end with that stuff, and I'm living back in the natural world again, which is a really important thing, I think, that we all touch grass occasionally. You know.
Listen, you're heading back off on tour, an acoustic tour in Europe, then the UK, back here then to Ireland. You've got an incredibly loyal fan base by now. Do you think it's that they trust you, so even if you try something new like that song, they're going to go along with it?
I do, yeah. I have faith in that. I mean, I think a lot of my music has changed so much over the years. At the beginning, it was quite... I guess it was quite didactic in a strange way. I sort of felt like I held the answers to everything, and that was where I gained my creative power. I thought I knew everything and that the world needed to know everything that I knew. And then life kicked me in the ass a few times, and I'm coming at it from the complete opposite perspective now. And I also had a sort of a utopian idea. All the stuff that comes with sort of a hangover from teenage years, that's what kept the fire burning when I used to write, you know. And as I lost all of that stuff, when I started to kind of swim a little bit deeper in the seas of nuance and complicated things and more interesting kind of worlds, it's, you have to find new things to keep that fire alive, because it's not as easy.
But do you enjoy it? You sound like you overthink.
Oh, thanks, Miriam. How nice of you to say. I do overthink. I mean, that's why I write all the time, and it keeps me sane.
Yeah.
It really does. It's like, it's how I live. If I'm in the middle of a song and say it's taking a year to write, everything I'm doing, when I'm going to the shop to buy milk, I'm doing it inside that song. It's kind of, it's kind of my world, you know. When I'm interacting with people, I'm doing it within the middle eight that I can't quite get yet. Whatever. It's just, I just love it. I'm obsessed with songwriting. Yeah.
So you don't find it tough if you love it, or do you find it tough?
I really do find it tough. Yeah. It's the challenge. It's the challenge to push things forward. Like at the moment, I'm listening to this beautiful album from, I think it's from 1964, by Charlie Mingus at the Town Hall. And it's just one of the most incredible pieces of music I've ever heard. I'd never heard it before until this week. And it's just set off all these ideas. And I'm just like, I want to make that album, but I'm not a jazz player, but I'm going to find a way to do that. Whatever way that's making me feel, I want to make other people feel that as well.
Tell me, look, the gigs in the Olympia, will they be acoustic or will you have a full band in tow?
It's going to be the full band. Ooh. The full gamut of emotions from early Villages material all the way. All that stuff where I thought I knew everything about the world and was trying to tell everyone the right way to go. I'm still singing those songs because they mean a lot to me. And I can do the Randy Newman trick on them and sort of separate myself and sort of play characters within them and stuff, which is quite fun. Yeah, full band. And I'm just feeling very energetic these days. So the shows are going to be as close to, a rock and roll experience as a Villagers show gets.
Fantastic. And the great thing is you're going to sing one of those gorgeous songs, favourite of mine.
Indeed.
Trick of the Light. Now, look, Conor O'Brien, it's always lovely to see you here in our Studio 8. The Villagers gigs in the Olympia are on the 8th and 9th of December. Tickets on ticketmaster.ie. And you're going to leave us now with this beautiful song, Trick of the Light. Thanks a million, Conor.
Thanks so much, Miriam.
My heart is spilling over, crashing on the ground. I can't see what's around me, but soon I'll come around. My faith is in the balance of a million tiny words, so I return to silence. Yeah.